greatly appreciate your presence this evening. Life is often a time of discovery. We find experiences, education, lessons, and mistakes. Yet everything we do is known of God, as has been taught on Sunday morning by Jim and Alan, talking about the omnis. You know, God is omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient. And many people will think, well, if I'm doing something in the dark by myself, you know, or somewhere away from everybody else, no one will know. No one knows what I'm doing. But it's a statement, really, of non-belief, not believing what God truly can do. So the question is, and the title is, will our sin find us out? The title is actually, your sin will find you out. And the main text tonight, at least initially, will be out of the 32nd chapter of Numbers. And in the first five verses, it talks about some of the tribes, and they have a desire. Verse 1, it reads, "Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. When they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle. The children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses and to Eleazar the priest and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibon and Jazer and Nimrah and Heshbon and Eleah and Shebam and Nebo and Beon, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, is a land for cattle, and thy servants have cattle. Wherefore, said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan." So the Reubenites and the Gadites, Reuben and Gad being two of the sons of Jacob, later named Israel, they see this land, which is not in the promised land, but it's good for cattle, and it's to the east of the Jordan. And they're saying, we'd like to possess it because we have cattle and it's a good place to have cattle. Okay, you know, certain places you find have more cattle than others. I like to talk about the trip to Arkansas. One of the things Sajana commented on was we were driving through Arkansas, was she saw more areas with cows than corn. Well, you know, when some of the level areas of Arkansas is like this, it's easier to have the cows in many ways. And some areas are better for cattle than others. But the Reubenites and the Gadites present this idea to Moses, and Moses has a problem. Continue reading in verse 6 of Numbers 32. "And Moses said to the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, Shall your brethren go to war, and shall you sit here? And wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them? Thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. And when they went up into the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel, that they should not go into the land which the Lord had given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled the same time, and he sware, saying, Surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I sware unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. And the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was consumed. And behold, you are risen up in your father's stead, an increase of sinful men, to augment yet the fierce anger of the Lord toward Israel. For if you turn away from after him, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness, and you shall destroy all this people." In other words, Moses is saying, you know what? You're discouraging the people. We have just lost a generation except for Joshua and Caleb, and Moses is going to be, you know, not going to be going over either. He's saying, you're just like those 10 out of the 12 spies. If you take this land and you don't fight along with your other brothers, It would discourage the people to fight because, you know, you're just like those 10 spies 40 years ago. You're going to cause the same curse to come upon this generation, and everybody's going to drop dead, going to wander some more, and then what? You're going to condemn all these people to death because you're going to discourage them. They're going to say, well, we don't want to fight if they're not going to fight. And it could jeopardize, and as it says in verse 15, it could destroy the generation so they could be wandering until they drop. So what do the Reubenites and Gadites say to this? Well, in verse 16, they came near to him, you know, the people of Reuben and Gad, they come near to Moses and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our cattle and cities for our little ones, but we ourselves will go ready armed before the children of Israel until we have brought them into their place, and our little ones shall dwell in the fenced cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return unto our houses until the children of Israel have inherited every man his inheritance, for we will not inherit with them on yonder side Jordan or forward, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side Jordan eastward. In other words, they're saying, okay, we're not going to discourage our brothers. They offer to go along and agree to go with their brethren, their fellow Israelites, to do their part before they take their requested inheritance. You know, they didn't want the land in the promised land, but they wanted this inheritance. So Moses replies in verse 20. Verse 20, and Moses said to them, if you will do this thing, if you will go armed before the Lord to war, and will go all of you armed over Jordan before the Lord until he hath driven out his enemies from before him, and the land be subdued before the Lord, then afterward you shall return and be guiltless before the Lord and before Israel. And this land shall be your possession before the Lord. But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord. And be sure, your sin will find you out. Build you cities for your little ones and folds for your sheep, and do that which hath proceeded out of your mouth. In other words, he's telling them in verses 20 through 24, you will keep your word. And that's important, he says, because your sin's going to find you out in verse 23. And in verse 25 through 27, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben spake to Moses, saying, thy servants will do as my Lord commandeth. Our little ones, our wives, our flocks, and all our cattle shall be there in the cities of Gilead. But thy servants will pass over every man armed for war before the Lord to battle, as my Lord saith. They agree, Reuben and Gad do. So it continues in verse 28. So concerning them, Moses commanded Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the chief fathers of the tribes of the children of Israel. And Moses said unto them, if the children of Gad and the children of Reuben will pass with you over Jordan, every man armed to battle before the Lord, and the land shall be subdued before you, then you shall give them the land of Gilead for a possession. But if they will not pass over with you armed, they shall have possessions among you in the land of Canaan. And the children of Gad and the children of Reuben answered, saying, as the Lord hath said unto thy servants, so will we do. We will pass over armed before the Lord into the land of Canaan, that the possession of our inheritance on this side Jordan may be ours. And Moses gave unto them, even to the children of Gad and the children of Reuben, and unto half the tribe of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, the land with the cities thereof in the coasts, even the cities of the country round about. So Moses tells the other tribes' leaders of this arrangement. And Gad and Reuben and half of Manasseh say, we agree to this. And to the end of the chapter, in verse 34, the children of Gad built Dibon and Ataroth and Aroer and Atroth, Shophan and Jaazer and Jagabah and Beth-Nimrah and Beth-Haran, fenced cities and folds for sheep. And the children of Reuben built Heshbon and Eleilah and Kirjathaim and Nebo and Baalmeon, their names being changed, and Shibma, and gave other names unto the cities which they builded. And the children of Maker, the son of Manasseh, went to Gilead and took it and dispossessed the Amorite which was in it. And Moses gave Gilead unto Machir the son of Manasseh, and he built therein. And Jair the son of Manasseh went and took the small towns thereof and called them Havoth-Jair. And Nobah went and took Kenath and the villages thereof and called it Nobah after his own name. So we have Gad and Reuben and half of Manasseh now building the cities. They're putting their little ones and their sheep and their cattle there while they go and fight. And they, with their brother tribes, they will do their part. Great story, right? In fact, we studied this not too long ago on Wednesday nights in the Old Testament when we were in Deuteronomy. I mean, in Numbers, we're in Deuteronomy now. And so what do we learn from it? Well, first of all, we have to realize that we also have a promised land. It is also waiting for us, and we can refer to it as New Jerusalem. In Hebrews, the 12th chapter and verse 22, it says, "But we are come unto Mount Zion, and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels." And also in Hebrews 13 and verse 9, it says, "Be not carried about with diverse and strange doctrines, for it is a good thing that the heart be established with grace, not with meats which have not profited them which have been occupied therein. We have an altar whereof they have no right to eat which serve the tabernacle. For the bodies of those beasts whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned without the camp. Wherefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate. Let us go therefore unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. By him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually, that is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name, but to do good and to communicate, forget not, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased." A new Jerusalem to come. It's talked about in Revelation 3 in verse 7, "To the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these things saith he that is holy, he that is true, he that hath the key of David. And he that openeth and no man shuts, and shuts and no man openeth. I know thy works. Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. For thou hast a little strength, and hast kept my word, and hast not denied my name. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet, to know that I have loved thee, because thou hast kept the word of my patience. I will also keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth. Behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which thou hast, that no man take thy crown. Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. And I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my God. And I will write upon him my new name. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches." You know, we also see it mentioned in Revelation 21 in verses 1 through 11. You know, in verse 10 it says, "And he carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God, and her light was like unto a stone most precious, even like a jasper stone clear as crystal." A new city, which is waiting for the saved. You know, John 14 talks about that there are many mansions awaiting for us. You know, in John 14 it says in verse 1, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And whither I go, you know, and the way you know." You know, there is the New Jerusalem. There is a promised land awaiting for us. But not everyone's going to inherit it. What happened to those that did not believe? Well, they did not go into the promised land with Joshua and Caleb because they did not go in due to unbelief. Revelation 20 and verse 11, it says, "And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, great, small and great, stand before God, and the books were open, and another book was open, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every man according to their works, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death, and whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire." You know, verse 12, it says, the small and the great are going to be coming before the throne of God. They're going to stand before God, and then the books will be open. And we're going to find that God does know the secret things. We'll see that God is everywhere and knows everything. And the book of life will show whether we belong or not. For some, it will be a wonderful day because God knows what they did. And there are some who will not have a happy time because God knew what they did. And sin will find us out if we don't do anything about it. You know, in Matthew, the 12th chapter, in verse 33, it talks about that we have to make account. In Matthew 12 and 33, it says, "Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and its fruit corrupt, for the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. For I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words shalt thou be condemned." We all are going to make account for everything. As it said in Revelation, the small and the great, the most minor person on earth who ever walked it, and the greatest who ever walked the earth, will have to make the same account of their lives. And that should scare everybody to death. Romans 3:23, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." There's no one in this room who has, by their works, a home in heaven. It's the grace of God along with the obedience of the gospel. Yes, we must do things to obey, but without God's mercy, the unmerited favor of the grace, we don't have a chance, nor do we deserve a chance. It is God's mercy that gives us this opportunity. And we're talking about, well, why does God love his creation? Because he does. We have to make account for everything, but we have a chance. We are given opportunity to make things right, to clean our dirty souls, the dirty home that we reside in on this earth. Not necessarily talking about your house. You know, there's some people that are finicky clean. They'll clean. You know, I had a grandmother who believed the best way to mop the floor was with a toothbrush. And you know what? That took a long time. Can you imagine taking a toothbrush and mopping your floor with it? You know what? My mom tells a story about when I was born. It was a big deal. So my mom's mother and my father's mother, the one with the toothbrush, decided to clean their house. It took the one grandma 4 hours to clean one room while the other one cleaned the whole house in the same time. We're not talking about cleaning your house on this earth. We're talking about cleaning up our souls, taking the sin off, taking care of those things. You know, think about it. The righteous are scarcely saved, as it says in 1 Peter 4, And in verse 12, "Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. But rejoice inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy. If you be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye, for the Spirit of glory and of God resteth upon you. On their part he is evil spoken of, but on your part he is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. Yet if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on his behalf. For the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of God. And if it first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of God? And if the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall the ungodly and the sinner appear? Wherefore let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to him in well-doing as unto a faithful Creator." The righteous are scarcely saved. Think about that. Think about the great men of the Bible. Abraham. Abraham lied to people saying, "This is not my wife, this is my sister." Yes, she was his half-sister, but he did it out of deceit. We have David that was trying to send Uriah Hittite, you know, to go to his wife whom David had adulterously impregnated, trying to cover up his sin, and eventually he just has Uriah with directions to send him forth into battle so that he will be killed, therefore causing his death. We have the Apostle Paul who caused innocent Christians to be imprisoned, some probably put to death. We have Peter who denied his Lord three times, and all the other disciples and other great men of God who all sinned. And you know, Peter's writing here knowing that he has done all these bad things, that he has done things that should not allow him to go to heaven. And he says, the righteous are scarcely saved. They're all going to be saved by the skin of their teeth. What about those who don't care? Who don't want their souls cleansed or don't believe it can happen? Because the light of truth is going to reveal everything. John 3 and verse 14, "And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God." See, it's all going to be revealed. Every careless word, every evil thing that we've done. I've done plenty of evil in my life. I'm not going to deny it. I've done things that make your hair curl. Or if your hair is curly, it'd probably uncurl it. And I, you know, we laugh, but you know what? This is serious business. We have to change ourselves. Quit that life. Because there's no hiding from God. The sin will find us out. Revelation 6 and 12 says, in the opening of the seals, and it says in verse 12, "When I beheld that he had opened the sixth seal, when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood, And the stars of heaven fell into the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together. And every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth and the great men, the rich men, the chief captains and the mighty men and every bondman and every free man hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? There's no hiding. If you could manage to get mad enough to turn into the Hulk, and you can pick up the mountain and go underneath it and have it fall down on you, and you try to hide, guess what? God's still going to find you. You will not avoid his wrath. And, no, this lesson had nothing to do with barbecue, nothing to do with pickup trucks, and my Bible didn't get flown underneath the seat another time. Last month, we were driving to Normal, it was Sheila and I saw a billboard on US 31 on your way to Kokomo, and there was a billboard saying, your sin will find you out, quote unquote, Numbers 32 and 23. And I said, well, I'm not sure exactly what they're trying to do. He says, I would do it differently. And I said, it's a warning, this verse. It's from Moses to the Gadites and the Reubenites and half of Manasseh to do their part. And it doesn't say that. And I was like, it's out of context. But, you know, we can still apply it to us. Have we done our part? Have we discovered our part in God's service? You know, have you obeyed the gospel? You know, we talk about hearing the word as in Revelation 10 and believing the word as in Mark 16:16. He who believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but he that believeth not shall be damned. You know, to repent of your word as in Acts 2:38, to confess the word as in Romans 10 and Acts 8. To be baptized, we just read in Mark 16:16, and to be faithful unto death, as you can read in Revelation 2 and verse 10. In other words, are we faithful? Are we at services all the time? You know, Hebrews 10:25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. You know, it is a way to study, you know, 2 Timothy 3:15, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. In other words, are we doing the things to stay faithful? Are we reading the word? Are we studying the word? Are we taking advantage of the opportunities to study with those of like precious faith at the times of the services? Do we truly put our worship to practice? True practice. Is service to God coming first in our lives? If we're not serving God as we should, are we sliding back to perdition, to the final ruin? The question is, are we drifting? I read something talking about fewer congregations exist in the church in this country. Don't know if that's true or not. But you know what, brethren, I think I see a lot of drifting. I see it everywhere. What used to be scandalous to people is not scandalous anymore. What are we doing? Are we doing our part to encourage others? Or are we just like those 10 spies saying we shouldn't do what the Lord said? Let's not take advantage of what God has given us. There are plenty of people that can discourage us. Don't let that happen to you. We need to be encouragers in this congregation. Whether it's to be a deacon or an elder, whether it's to be qualified, whether it's to teach class or preach a sermon, or to sit down with someone saying, I'd like to study the word with you. We need that encouragement. And that's our lesson. There's been invitation song selected. If the invitation applies to you in any fashion, please come forward, make your wants known while we stand and while we sing.